It's our great pleasure to have Professor Leah Santos today with us from Yeshiva University. She will be talking about Speck of Chaos. So she's an expert in the field of quantum chaos, non-equilibrium quantum dynamics, and thermalization. She did her PhD from University of Sao Paulo in Brazil and in the year 2000. Then she went on to do her postdoc at Yale University, Michigan State University, and Dartmouth College. Currently, she is the professor of physics at Yeshiva University. So thank you, Leah, for joining, and you can take it from here.
All right. So thank you, Minu, for this invitation, Mike as well, and you all for showing up. Let me put full screen here. Oops. And so the results that I'll present were obtained with Jonathan. Jonathan was a postdoc working with me, but he has been a professor in Mexico for some time, and Francisco Perez Bernal, who is a professor in Spain. So what is the idea of this talk? Is to tell you about how to get chaos in interacting many body interacting systems, now in systems with many interacting particles. And the idea is that we can induce chaos in these systems even with a local perturbation, even with a small local perturbation. So in the case of a spin chain, having a single site with Zeeman splitting different from the others is enough to get chaos. And well, to tell you that, to show you that, first I am going to tell you what we mean by quantum chaos, and then I'm going to present some indicators of quantum chaos. So I'll show you that these systems with this small local perturbation satisfy quantum chaos according to these different indicators of quantum chaos. So one of the most popular kinds of indicators are those associated with level statistics, but we're also going to talk about the structure of the eigenstates. Quantum chaos is what guarantees that isolated many-body quantum systems can thermalize. Now, quantum chaos is like the mechanism that guarantees this onset of thermalization. So we can also go the other way around. We can pick indicators that we use to study whether the system thermalized or not and use them as indicators of quantum chaos, and we're also going to do that. This part is associated with static properties of the system. We're also going to talk about indicators of quantum chaos associated with the dynamics. The main one is what is known as correlation hole, which is now called, especially among people in high energy physics, RAMP. So this is a way to detect spectral correlations in the dynamics. When we talk about quantum chaos and dynamics, also what comes to mind is the out of time order correlator. So I'll say a few words about that. The way I see the out of time order correlator nowadays is that it's a good indicator of instability, but not necessarily chaos. I'll come back to this. Okay, so let me start with level statistics, which is the most popular one. And so we talk about level statistics, we think about random matrices, full random matrices, matrices that are filled with random numbers, such as those that Wigner used back in the 50s to try to describe statistically the spectra of heavy nuclei. So very complex systems. Let me then fill the matrix with random numbers instead of going for the details of these interactions. And the only constraint is that the matrix should satisfy the symmetries of the system we are trying to describe. Okay, so you know this the spectrum of a random matrix is very much, the eigenvalues are very much correlated. They repel each other. They don't cross. The spectrum is rigid. And one way to see that is by collecting the spacing between neighboring levels, looking at the distribution, we get the famous Wigner-Dyson distribution. So confirming what I said, and then that there is no spacing close to zero, so there are no crossings. The levels repel each other. Simple idea that works so well. Now you get data, the spectrum from a real heavy nucleus, and you see good agreement with the Wigner-Dyson distribution. So it works so well, the idea was extended to other complex systems, molecules, quantum dots, and so on. Now, of course, realistic systems not really described by full random matrix. Now, when you have a matrix completely filled, what that implies is basically that all the particles are interacting at the same time. Realistic systems, we have couplings, two-body couplings, or in nuclear physics, we can go to three-body, but not much beyond that. So if you look at the Hamiltonian matrix of realistic systems, you see that it's banded, it's sparse, no? So it's not completely filled. And of course, Wigner knew this very well. He introduced what is known as Wigner band random matrices, where you put numbers, non-zero numbers, just within a band. Now, the problem when we start going out of full random matrices is that starts getting harder and harder to get analytical results. But this is an attempt to bring us closer to what is more realistic. And people went on adding sparsity to these kind of matrices. There are also power law band random matrices where the amplitude of these elements decay as we move away from the diagonal. Several different improvements, and one that is really very much realistic is the two-body random ensemble. What is that? You have the one-body part, these are random numbers, and the two-body part, these are also random numbers. And so this is the kind of Hamiltonian that practically everybody in the quantum chaos community has studied, which is what is now called SYK model. Of course, the questions that were being asked back in the 90s, using these two-body random ensembles are different from the questions that the SYK model is trying to address. But just wanted to show to you this connection. But anyway, up to now, I didn't say anything about quantum chaos, no? Because the analogy, or what we call quantum chaos, comes in a different context. Basically, in studies of systems with few degrees of freedom. And so what people realized studying, for example, billiards, was that when the billiard in the classical limit was chaotic, and now we're talking about chaos in the sense of positive Lyapunov exponents mixing, then in the quantum domain, you would get level statistics as random matrix, you would get a Wigner-Dyson distribution. But if the system in the classical limit was regular, then in the quantum domain, you don't get the Wigner-Dyson, you get, for example, Poisson distribution. So this is this connection between level statistics in the quantum domain and chaos in the usual way in the classical limit. So what we call quantum chaos are these signatures, are these properties that you find in the quantum domain that will tell you whether the system in the classical limit is chaotic or not. So this is well established for systems with few degrees of freedom. What happens now in with the systems with many interacting particles, these are the systems we are interested in now, well, is this correspondence is not very clear yet, not either because doing the semi-classical analysis of the system may be too hard, or the classical limit may not even be well defined. So what I'm going to be doing in this talk, I'm going to simplify my life. I'm going to study just the quantum domain of these many-body quantum systems. And if I see a Wigner-Dyson distribution, I'm going to say that the system is chaotic. If this is the best way to define quantum chaos, we can discuss, okay? But this is what I'm going to be doing here. But let me be more specific about that. Now, usually when we get papers in physics, we see this like dichotomy, no? Got Wigner-Dyson, chaos. Didn't get a Wigner-Dyson, got a Poisson integrable model. This is an oversimplification. Let me show to you some details. So let me start with this side, the Poisson. If I have an integrable model, will I necessarily get a Poisson? No, not necessarily. I could have an integrable model with an excessive number of degeneracies. Then you don't get a Poisson, you get a peak. You could also have an integrable model where the levels are almost equidistant. The extreme case of that is the harmonic oscillator when they are really equidistant. So you're not going to get a Wigner-Dyson there. Oh, sorry, you're not going to get a Poisson there. You're going to get a funny shape that will be telling us that this spectrum is even more correlated than what we have in random matrices. Okay. All right, so integrability, not necessarily Poisson. How about Poisson? Does it mean integrability? Again, it depends. We could have a chaotic model, but with different symmetries. And if I don't separate the eigenvalues according to these symmetry sectors, put them all together, well, they have no reason to be correlated. No? They belong to different subspaces. And then if I mix and put all these eigenvalues together, we can get a Poisson, even though the system is chaotic. So to detect chaos, you really have to be careful about the symmetry sectors. Okay, this is the story about Poisson. Let's go to Vigna Dyson. If I get a Vigna Dyson, can I just say the system is chaotic? Again, it depends. You could build an integral Hamiltonian that would show a Vigna Dyson distribution. I don't know if it would be a realistic system, but you can do that. This has been done. But these cases, they are very delicate. Now you change the parameters a little bit and the Vigna Dyson is lost. There is another case where you can get Vigna Dyson distribution, but it's just a finite size effect. Let's pick the Anderson model in 1D. No? So we have the hopping and the on-site disorder. We know that 1D Anderson model is localized no matter how small this disorder strength is. But when you study a finite system, now this is true for a thermodynamic limit. When you pick a finite system, if this chain is smaller than the localization length, well, you don't realize, now the system doesn't realize that it's localized, and then you can get a Vigna Dyson. But again, it's not robust. Now you increase the system size and it will be lost. So what I'm going to be calling chaos here is a system that will show eigenvalues, level statistics, as in random matrix, so Vigna Dyson distribution, but which is robust. I increase the system size and it persists. I change the parameters a little bit and it persists, okay? Okay, so we'll be talking about spin models. So let me give you an example of the spin models that we'll be studying. For example, this Hamiltonian, which is known as XXZ model. In 1D, when we have spins half, when we have just couplings between nearest neighbors, this Hamiltonian, this model is integrable, can be solved with the Bethe ansatz. And for most of the parameters that we use, for this delta is smaller than one, we do get Poisson distributions. There are some special cases like delta half, né, where you get an excessive number of degeneracies, but usually you get a Poisson. Okay, integrable model, but there are ways to break integrability. For example, if we add couplings between second neighbors, so when the strength of these couplings between second neighbors is of the order of those between nearest neighbors, we get good Vigna Dyson distribution. And what we see is that as we increase the system size, we can actually decrease the strength of these couplings between second neighbors. So it looks like as you increase in the system size, this is becoming smaller and smaller. So it looks like in the thermodynamic limit, even an infinitesimal breaking term could be enough for the Vigna Dyson. The other case is, well, XXZ, but I add on-site disorder. And so what this term is telling me, on each site, we have a different Zeeman splitting. These are random numbers. And so this on-site disorder. Again, when the disorder strength is of the order of the coupling, we get a good Vigna Dyson distribution. So this is the model that is used to study many body localization. Now, why is it so hard to localize a system like that? Because of this, now this competition, this interplay between interaction and disorder drives the system into the chaotic domain. Now, chaos means delocalization. Again, as we increase the system size, and it looks, so as I increase the system size, I can get good Vigna Dyson distribution with smaller and smaller disorder strength. Again, it looks like in the infinitesimal, in the thermodynamic limit, an infinitesimal H would be enough for chaos. In the other direction, as we increase the disorder strength larger than J, that's the region where many body localization should happen. But that's now a limit that has been in question. There are some people wondering if many body localization can really happen in these systems. Okay, but what I showed back in 2004, which came a little bit like a surprise. I was studying actually the model with on-site disorder. Now I have a work from 2004 about many body localization. But then what I did is, okay, let me put a single defect instead of all of the sites, a single one. Now, so a single site with Zeeman splitting different from the others. And there we are, we got the Vigna Dyson. And we would, I got this Vignadais no matter where I would put this defect, any site, except for, from the edge. So now when the chain was open boundaries, then at the edge, it remains integrable. But anywhere else, I would get this Vignadais. So it comes a little bit like a surprise, not this local perturbation. Well, this was back in 2004. I came back to this model in 2014, already with Jonathan. Because there was some skepticism. People say, no, this must be just a finite size effect. If you increase the system size, this should be gone. So what we decided to do with Jonathan is, okay, so let's do a systematic comparison between this model and this other model where we have couplings between second neighbors. And nobody questions that this model is chaotic. So let's do a comparison between the two. And from this comparison, what we saw is that when this amplitude of the defect was of the order of the coupling, like I'm going to be showing results for 0.9, now J is 1, so 0.9 of J. And this other model, when these couplings between second neighbors was like half of the ones between nearest neighbors, the two models presented very similar properties. Okay. For the model with couplings between second neighbors, I could still get better correlations if I go with this lambda above, going close to one. Here, no, I'm already at the limit. Now, if I keep increasing this amplitude, I will break the chain to two pieces. But for this region of parameters, they show very similar properties, and that's what I'm going to show to you now. We started with this comparison. Just by looking, the easiest thing, just by looking at the Hamiltonian matrix, yeah? And we can get some useful information just by looking at the Hamiltonian matrix. But what we did was, instead of using the basis, the computational basis, not the site basis, spins pointing up or down in the Z direction, instead of using this simple basis, we picked the eigenstates of the XXZ part and used that as our basis to look at the matrix. And this is what you're seeing here, both models. Now, so what do we have in this matrix? Well, bright colors mean large numbers, no? And black, very small numbers. So both matrices are banded, as we expect, no? For systems with few body couplings. And the amplitude of these elements decrease as we move away from the diagonal. So kind of similar, but this is just a picture. Let's go and be a little bit more quantitative. In this analysis, just a matrix. So what I'm showing here is the average value of the off-diagonal elements. Now, as I said, here, these off-diagonal elements decrease as we move away from the diagonal. Okay, so this is what we are showing here. Black is the system with couplings between second neighbors. Red is the single defect model, and they are kind of similar. True that this one is winning for a little bit, but the behavior is similar. Let me show to you another thing, which what we call connectivity. What is this? We counted how many elements we had, or how many off-diagonal elements that were not zero. In other words, for this state here, how many states, how many basis vector are directly coupled with it? Yeah. And again, similar for both models. No? High connectivity. And no, this is 10 to 3. So high connectivity and similar behavior, similar shape for both. One more thing, and I'll be done with the matrix, but one more thing is how effective these couplings are. No? So suppose I have this term connecting these two, the N and M elements in the diagonal. No? When is this term going to be effective? If it's larger than this energy difference. Yeah? So what we looked at is this ratio between this coupling term, these off-diagonal elements, and these energy differences. If it's larger than one, that means the coupling is effective. Now, if I'm after chaos, it should be larger than one. And what we see, yeah, it is all larger than one and similar for both models. For the model with couplings between second neighbors, I could make this even higher. These black points I could put even higher. But at this region, everything is very similar. Okay, so just to show, okay, if there is a difference between these two models, where should it be? So let's look at the eigenvalues. This kappa that I'm showing here is telling us how close we are to a Wigner-Dyson. So if kappa is small, we have a Wigner-Dyson distribution. So as I increase the defect, or as I increase the couplings between second neighbors, my kappa goes to a small number, indicating, yes, we get a Wigner-Dyson. Similar, again, for both models. No? So again, black couplings with second neighbors, red is single defect. And things only improve as I increase the system size. This is 12, this is 15, this is 18. Another detail about level statistics. Level spacing distribution detects only short range correlations. It's equivalent to that ratio of consecutive level spacings. They detect only short range correlations. When we are studying the eigenvalues of a system, it's a good idea to do a more complete analysis and check also for long range correlations. So there are different quantities to detect long range correlations, such as the level number variance. What is that? Just the variance of the levels that we have in a certain interval L. So if these eigenvalues are uncorrelated, this variance grows linearly. Now, that's the case of when we have Poisson distribution, it grows linearly. In random matrices where these eigenvalues are correlated, it grows slowly, it follows this log. And then we compare that for the two models again. So the single defect, the spectrum is not as rigid as the one for second neighbors, but it is chaotic. And as I said, things improve as we increase the system size. Okay, so all that to try to convince people, yeah, it looks like it is chaotic. This is just to show to you the importance of doing this analysis of long range. So this is a parenthesis here. This is the model with couplings between second neighbors. When this couplings between second neighbors is of the order, 0.16 or 0.08, I already get a good Wigner-Dyson distribution. When I go to check also long range correlations, the level number variance, look at where 0.08 is or 0.16 is. Now, this is telling me, well, the spectrum is not that rigid yet as when I go to much stronger couplings. Okay, so this is just a parenthesis. Very well. So, remember what I told you. No, well, I mentioned to you the studies of thermalization. No, so I told you that when the system is chaotic, I expect it to thermalize. No, chaos, quantum chaos is what guarantees thermalization. So let's see if this single defect model can really thermalize. And so to show you that, let me talk a little bit about thermalization. And to reach this point, what do we mean by thermalization? Let me start by talking about eigenstates. So the eigenstates of full random matrices, they're just random vectors. So they are huge superpositions. These coefficients are just random numbers, all of them. They're all equivalent. What I'm showing this plot is this quantity, the participation ratio, which is 1 over the sum of these coefficients to the fourth. Not square, because square would be just 1, so to the fourth, but you can study other moments as well. So if this state is very much spread out, very much delocalized, I have many, many, many tiny Cs. And so if I put it here, I get a very large number for this participation ratio. So delocalization means large participation ratio, localization small. So here I'm showing the participation ratio for all of the eigenstates of one random matrix. It's just one realization. The matrix is not even large, and you see flat. So all the states have the same level of delocalization. They're all equivalent. As I said, they're just random vectors. So the participation ratio is proportional to the dimension of the Hilbert space. Fine, this is random matrix. Let's go to realistic systems. So here I'm showing the participation ratio for all of the eigenstates from that model where we have couplings between second neighbors. And what we see now, well, there is an energy dependence. Close to the edges of the spectrum, the states are very much localized. It's away from the edges, closer to the middle, that the states are very much spread out, close to random vectors, never there. We always have some level of correlation here, but that's what we are getting close. So this energy dependence is important in studies of dynamics. Now, if I start with an initial state here, the dynamic should be faster. It's important in studies of thermalization because this is the region where chaos really is. Yeah? In these studies of eigenstates, we also go on, pick each one of the eigenstates and study these coefficients. What I'm going to do now is looking at this structure, but not of the eigenstates. I'm going to look at the structures of initial state, already thinking about dynamics, already thinking about this evolution of the system towards a possible thermal equilibrium. Right. So here I have a Hamiltonian, is the idea of quantum dynamics. Now I have a Hamiltonian, that's the one that will describe the evolution. I'm going to break it into two parts. This H naught here, I'll call it the unperturbed part of the Hamiltonian, this is the one that defines my initial state. So my initial state is an eigenstate of this Hamiltonian. And I'm going to write it in terms of the energy eigenbasis. So I'm going to look at the structure of this initial state in the energy eigenbasis. Okay, so let's see what we are going to do. This total Hamiltonian is chaotic. We have level repulsion. I'm going to pick initial state with energy in the middle of the spectrum because of what I said, middle of the spectrum is what chaos should be. But there is one more piece of information missing in this story, which is what is this perturbation? Yeah. So on the right side, what I'm showing in this plot is the energy distribution. So it's the sum of delta functions. So this is the energy distribution, but weighted by the components of the initial state. So what I'm showing here is the energy distribution of the particular initial state that I selected. Of course, if this perturbation is very small, well, my initial state will be very close to one of these eigenstates. So this distribution is very narrow, close to a delta function. But as I increase the perturbation, then it spreads. First, it becomes a Lorentzian. Even stronger perturbation, I'll finally get a Gaussian. It's in this region of strong perturbation that I expect these coefficients to start getting close to those of random matrices. Now, where we start getting coefficients that are almost uncorrelated. Never there, but close. Okay, so middle of the spectrum and a strong perturbation, we reach this point. Let me put all this together, the discussion about eigenvalues and the discussion about eigenstates to talk about thermalization. This plot is really a detail. I could also study just the coefficients of the distribution of these coefficients. This is done in random matrix also. The distribution of these coefficients in random matrix follow this equation here, which is the Porter-Thomas distribution. Here, middle of the spectrum, strong perturbation, my coefficients agree with Porter-Thomas. Okay, so just confirming what I just said. But let's put all this in the study of thermalization. So we pick an observable and we let it evolve. Let's write that in terms of the components of the initial state, eigenvalues, and these off diagonal elements of the observer. And this one is the eigenstate expectation values. Okay, after some time, what happens is this term averages out. Now this term just gives us fluctuations around that infinite time average. When we reach this point, that's what we call equilibration. So we know that this term will just give us small fluctuations because my Hamiltonian is chaotic. So these off diagonal elements are small. Middle of the spectrum, strong perturbation, these components, no, these coefficients are very small. We don't have the degeneracies, no, so we have this dephasing going on. So all that will contribute for these tiny fluctuations, which decreases with system size. So that to say, we reached equilibrium. No, we are practically all the time at this saturation level. So this is the first step in the studies of thermalization. Second one is the one that I think you're familiar with, now comparing this infinite time average with a thermodynamic average, like the microcanonical ensemble. If they agree, that's what we call thermalization. So this one depends on the components of the initial state. This is just an average of those expectation values. When do they agree? Eigenstate thermalization hypothesis would say, when these expectation values do not change much. Is there a question? No. Okay. So when this eigenstate expectation values do not change much, if I look at one eigenstate or another eigenstate closing energy. But this hasn't finished the question. No, it hasn't answered the question yet. The question is still there. When will this be true? And well, if you think about random matrices, always, no, this is trivial. In the scenario of random matrices, all of the eigenstates are random vectors. So it doesn't matter which random vector I pick, this will be satisfied. But this is trivial. If we move to realistic systems, then we know if I'm close to the middle of the spectrum, where my states are close to those random vectors, this will be satisfied as well. Yeah. So chaos guarantees thermalization in this sense. So what is it? What do we study in this analysis of thermalization? Well, we can do what I just said, now look at the structure of the eigenstates, like participation ratio. When we have an integrable model, we see large fluctuations. So states closing energy are very different. Chaotic systems, well, you have this smooth function of energy. So states closing energy are very similar. This is the model for couplings between second neighbors. This is the single defect. Again, the same story. So just repeating over and over that a single defect is enough for chaos. We can also look at, and we do look at, the eigenstate expectation values. In the chaotic cases, they get squeezed together, and that's what we were talking about. So I pick select a single one that will agree with the average. And so they get squeezed together for this model and also for the single defect. Integrable large fluctuations. And we go on with this kind of analysis. The study of these eigenstate expectation values is what is now called diagonal ETH. Remember that I said this is one part of the story. We also have to guarantee that this term will become very small. So another thing that we also study is this term, like the off-diagonal elements, and I'll come back to that. Okay, so all this confirming, single defect is also chaotic. Let me finally now come to the new paper, the spec of chaos. So why did we decide to come back to this? Last year, there were some studies, Anatoly Polkovnikov, there were some people coming back to this model. And even before, in 2018, John Gould and Marcus, they came back to this model and they had a very interesting result, actually. They showed that for this model, it looks like the transport behavior is actually ballistic. So this comes as a surprise because we usually associate chaos with diffusion. And for this model, there was this ballistic behavior. And well, so there was this paper. And then, as I said, in 2020, there were new works about this model. So then with Jonathan and Kuro, we decided, well, let people know that there is nothing extraordinary about this model. You can get chaos with this local perturbation in many other cases. So these are the examples that we showed in this work. Pick the easing in a transverse field. So this is a very simple model. You don't need beta ansatz to solve this one. You add the little defect, you get chaos. Or pick a model with spin one. So in a model with spin one to remain integrable, you cannot just have the XXZ part. You have to add other terms. So this Hamiltonian here is integrable, but you add a little defect and it becomes chaotic. So all this was to show to people nothing extraordinary about this one. And I think what is more interesting about this kind of model is really the analysis of transport behavior or dynamics, time scales. I think that might be when things can go different. And so showing a model with spin one, that could be an interesting place to study transport as well. So all of these models are chaotic in the sense that I'm using here. Now, robust Vigna-Dyson. So what we are showing in these panels, this beta. So what is this beta? It tells us how close we are to a Vigna-Dyson. You see, if beta is one, we have level repulsion. If beta is zero, we have just a Poisson. So you see, for all of the models, we have a region of values of the defect where beta goes to one. And what is more important yet, that this range increases as I increase the system size. Now, so see, blue here is 14, and then yellow is 16. So the range where the system is chaotic increased. So it's really robust. Okay, what else did we do in this spec of chaos? Well, we already talked about the analysis of diagonal ETH, no, the analysis of these expectation values. We went on looking also at the off-diagonal elements. What Masood had shown in this work was that the distribution of these off-diagonal elements is Gaussian when the system is chaotic, now when we have thermalization. This is again a reflection of the structure of the eigenstates. No? Well, how can we know if a distribution is Gaussian or not? You can look at kurtosis, for example. We are looking at this ratio here, which is the average of the square divided by the square of the average. If I have a Gaussian, this is going to be pi over 2. In one of those works from last year, Marcus and John studied this ratio comparing the XXE, the integral XXE, with the single defect. And what do they get? What did they get? For the integral, not pi over 2, so not Gaussian distribution. And things get worse as we increase the system size. You see, the gray here is 14, and the red is 20, so gets worse. Once you add that local perturbation, pi over 2, and things only improve as we increase the system size. All right. If we go to the other kinds of single defect models, it's the same story, pi over 2 everywhere. But there is something more interesting that I want to tell you about these off-diagonal elements. Now, this is just a repetition of what I said before. But out of this analysis came up something that I think is even more interesting. We picked this model where we have couplings between second neighbors, which is a chaotic model, we know. But we didn't take into account the symmetries. Okay, so what are the symmetries that we are leaving there? Parity, spin reversal, because we are looking at half filling. We also put this delta 1, so isotropic, we have conservation of total spin. And then if you look at level spacing distribution for all of these eigenvalues, you get something that looks very good, Poisson. If you didn't know about these symmetries, if you didn't know about this model, how would then know if the model is chaotic or not? Well, if you look at those, the distribution of the off-diagonal elements, what you see is a nice Gaussian with the novelty that it has a little peak in the middle. So this peak is indicating that there are remaining symmetries. And if you look at the ratio, you get flat, but not really pi over 2. You get a multiple pi over 2, depending on the observer that is select. So this is very nice. First, because it's an indicator of quantum chaos that you don't have to take into account the symmetries. So when you have a many-body system, it's not always trivial to identify all the symmetries. No? So this is good as an indicator of chaos. But I think more than that, it may work as a way to find out the symmetries, to count which symmetries they are, and maybe to identify which symmetries they are. And this is what we are trying to do now. Okay. Just one more example. That model with spin 1, remember that I said that for the XXZ open boundaries, if I would put a defect at the border, the system remains integral. Well, we thought that the same would be true for the spin 1, that if we would put a defect at the border, it would remain integral. And we did get a Poisson. But when we come to this analysis of off-diagonal elements, we actually get a Gaussian, indicating that the system became chaotic with this single defect at the border as well. But there is some symmetries there, and we don't know what the symmetries are. Yeah. All right, so all that discussion about static properties, eigenvalues, eigenstate, expectation values of observables. How about dynamics? Now, is there any way to detect chaos by looking at the dynamics of the systems? So this is an important question. All these indicators of chaos that I said before, like level statistics, well, they're great if you have access to them. Now, if you have access to the spectrum, fine. We look at level spacing distribution and so on, which is what we do in nuclear physics, where we have access to the spectrum. But suppose we are an experimentalist, like dealing with cold atoms or ion traps, where they usually don't have access to the dynamic, oh, to the spectrum. And they have access to the dynamics. So is there a way to say whether the system is chaotic by looking at the dynamics? When we mention chaos and dynamics, nowadays what comes to people's mind is the out-of-time order correlator. So the commutator between two operators at time zero, either they commute or this commutator is very small. As the system evolves, this commutator grows. And the claim was that if the growth is exponential, this should be indicating a chaotic system. In a way, this question is not so different from those old questions about Loschmidt echo, which was, again, if we have an exponential behavior, we should have a chaotic system. Well, the nice thing is that, yes, this is true. That was confirmed for systems where we have few degrees of freedom, like the kick rotor, the Galitzi study, or the DK model that the group by Jorge Hischer studied. You have, so these are all systems with few degrees of freedom. So you have the quantum, you have the classical, and you can compare things. So when the system in the classical limit was chaotic, then the autoc showed this exponential growth. And the nice thing is this rate coincided with the classical positive Lyapunov exponent. Excellent, no? So very nice. But then, and I think people, different people thought about the same thing at the same time, came this question. Is it really detecting chaos? And why is this question? There are classical systems where you can get a positive Lyapunov exponent, even though the system is not really chaotic, even though you don't really have mixing. An example of that. Pick a simple pendulum. Now, this is an integrable, it's a regular system. But if you invert the pendulum, well, this is very unstable. If you let it go, it really goes. You get a positive Lyapunov exponent. But this has nothing to do with chaos. It has only, it's only detecting instability. Okay, so thinking about things like this, people came back to the out-of-time order correlator and said, okay, so let's look at the DK model, for example, but in the regular regime, there is no chaos there. And let's look at it right at the critical point. What happens to the out-of-time order correlated? Oop, people got to this exponential growth. With the rate that coincides with the classical positive Lyapunov exponent, which is indicating instability, not chaos. And even if you go to a model that is completely regular, so no, to leave no doubts about it, not the Lipke model, which also has a critical point, again, this exponential behavior. So these are works by Jorge Hirsch, but there were other papers coming up at the same time. So the autoc, I think, is very nice, especially for the studies of spread of quantum information, but as an indicator of chaos, well, not necessarily. It's for sure an indicator of instability, but not chaos in the sense of chaos that we are using in this talk, okay? So the question is still there. Is there any way to detect chaos, to detect spectral correlations by looking at the dynamics? The answer is yes, but to detect spectral correlations in the dynamics, we have to wait, no? Much longer than the time scale for that exponential growth. Why? Even though we have level repulsion, we are dealing with many body systems. Now, these spacings are very small. So the dynamics, you have to give it time for it to finally realize that the spectrum is discrete and then detect if there are correlations or not. Okay. So in which form do we see these spectral correlations? So I'm going to show to you one quantity that will detect them, which is the survival probability. And so it's the overlap between the initial state and the evolved one. Very simple quantity, has different names, survival probability, return probability, fidelity. But you people there in Canada, right next to the NMR people, right next to David Corey, please don't call it Loschmidt echo. No, there is no echo here. I don't know, people decided to call it Loschmidt echo. You cannot do that. Anyway, so let me pick the survival probability. I can write it in terms of the components of the initial state. And so I have this sum, components, and the faces. I'm going to open this square, so I have a double sum here. If you look at this, well, you will see that this is very much related to what people call the spectral form factor. The spectral form factor is just this part. Yeah? The spectral form factor is just a way to study eigenvalues, to study spectrum in the time domain, but this is not a real dynamical quantity. Yeah, the survival probability is, because it has information about the initial state, it has information about the quench dynamics. Now, it's not just analysis of eigenvalues. You see that they are related, but this is more, no? Because what we are thinking is about the experimentalist who does not have access to the eigenvalues. No? It's the person who just picked an observable and is looking at its evolution. So let me stick to this one. So let me come back to the expression that I wrote here, that sum, and I'm not opening this square now. What I'm doing is I'm going to write this sum as an integral. And how can I do that? Well, this rho is a sum of delta functions with those components. This is what we saw before, right? It's the energy distribution of the initial state. If I put this here, we go back to the sum. So this is the energy distribution of the initial state. And you see that if I have information about this, I have information of this about the survival probability because I just have to do a Fourier transform. Middle of the spectrum, which is the chaotic region, strong perturbation. Remember what I showed to you, this distribution is Gaussian. This distribution in the range of strong perturbation is very similar to the histogram of all the eigenvalues, the real density of states. Very similar, a bit narrow, but very similar. So anyway, what do we have to do now? Fourier transform of that. Fourier transform the Gaussian gives me a Gaussian decay. This gamma that you see here is the width of the distribution. So 1 over gamma is the first important time scale, is the time scale for the depletion of the initial state. But if we wait a little longer, well, we will detect the borders of this distribution. And so the dynamic slows down, gives us a power law. Up to now, you see nothing about correlations. Now, up to now, everything that I told you about here has no information about the discreteness of the spectrum. We are just looking at the envelope, the bounds. So you see, is that sort of what I was saying? To detect correlations, we have to wait even longer. We have to go beyond this power law for the dynamics to realize that this spectrum is discrete. If it is correlated, then we'll see a manifestation. What is the manifestation? This dip that goes below the saturation point. This dip here only shows up if the eigenvalues are correlated. If you have Poisson, it doesn't show up. So this is known as correlation hole, and that's what I told you before. This is what people, especially in high energy physics, have decided to call it ramp, no? Because it will ramp, you go on this ramp to the saturation point. Yeah? This part is well described by this B2 function, the two-level form factor, which has been studied in random matrices. So we use all that to get analytical expressions for the survival probability for realistic systems. But what I wanted to discuss with you now is the spec of K. So let me stick just to the correlation hole, not talking about analytical results. All of those models, again, the single defect models, they will show the correlation hole. What is nice about the correlation hole? Well, you don't need to do any unfolding, no, if for people who don't like unfolding. But more than that, no, if you don't like to do unfold, you could look at the ratio of consecutive level spacings. what is nice about the correlation Ho is that it detects short and long range correlations, and you don't need unfolding. No? So it has a lot of information about the spectrum. And it shows up, it develops even if the system has many symmetries and you don't care or you don't know about these symmetries. So similar to that other quantity, you know, those off-diagonal elements, it's a good indicator because it's dynamic or because it doesn't care about symmetries, it doesn't care about unfolding. But again, it might be a way to detect, to identify symmetries, to count them and maybe identify them. If you know the level of this, the value of this saturation, if you know this minimum, you may be able to identify the symmetries, and that's what we are trying to do. But some details about the correlation Ho. There is an important property, the self-averaging, that is very important, for example, for disordered systems. What does it tell us is that, well, when is a quantity self-averaging? When this variance, you know, this relative variance, you know, so the variance divided by the square of the mean, when this...
Sorry, can I ask a quick question?
Sure, go on. Good, because yeah, I'm talking, I won't stop. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. On the previous slide, those plots were for single realizations, single instances of systems?
Yeah, this, I was going to tell you that all this story about self-averaging was to tell you that. Okay, so let me already answer. We don't do...
And sorry, what does plus, def here mean?
It's the model plus a single defect. Yeah, so this, I just didn't write. So it's the XXZ with a single defect, a single Zeeman splitting different from the others. The E is in a transverse...
And we could imagine... And we could imagine disorder averaging that defect or taking a single realization?
Yeah. Well, you could do disorder over this single defect, or you could do on-site disorder. We studied this correlation Ho in systems with on-site disorder, yeah. But...
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. We have many results there. It was Nick who asked, right? So in systems with on-site disorder, we talked about Tallis time, how the Tallis time depends on the disorder strength. So we have all these works. I can tell you about or send you the papers. Yeah, it's just that this talk is focusing on the single defect model. Okay. Anyway, so for the single defect model, answering your question, we don't see the Ho. For any kind of system, you don't see the Ho if you pick a single initial state, a single disorder realization. Why? Because this region is not self-averaging. I'll come back to that, but just answer your question quickly. What we did was an average over initial state. Since this model doesn't have on-site disorder, it's clean. No, it has a defect, but there are no random realizations associated with that. What we did was an average over initial states. Another way to smoothen the curve and get the Ho is to do running averages. We didn't do here, but you can also do that. Okay. And why we need these averages? Because of lack of self-averaging. And so a quantity is self-averaging when this relative variance decreases as we increase the system size. This is a very nice property, very important, because if it decreases, that means that if you're an experimentalist, as you increase your system size, you can reduce the number of samples. If you're a theoretician doing numerical studies, as you increase the system size, you can decrease the number of random realizations, now, for example. And we have a sequence of studies about self-averaging. So decreasing the number of realizations in this many-body system is very convenient, no? Because we are already having a lot of trouble with this huge Hilbert space. So if we can at least reduce the number of realizations, that is very nice. But what we've been seeing is that depending on the quantities, depending on the regime of the system, you cannot do that. Yeah. Like studies of many body localization, what Nick was asking, no systems with on-site disorder. There are many scenarios where you cannot do that. But here I'm sticking just to these models with a single defect. What we showed, and this is analytical, for the survival probability using random matrices, so it's an analytical result, this quantity is not self-averaging anywhere at any time scale. Which comes back to what I was saying. To see the whole, you have to do averages. If you have a disorder model, you can do averages over random realizations. If you have a clean model, you can have averages over initial states, or you can also do running average, but there will be, you will need to do averages, okay? But so I'm about to finish. Minu, if you want, I can finish, but I'm going to say one more thing, or should I continue? Okay, you are mute.
You can continue. Okay. You can continue for a few more minutes.
So the survival probability may not be the best quantity for experimental observation. Now, these studies with cold atoms, who knows? There are some discussions that it could be experimentally studied, but what we thought about is there any existing experimental quantity where this correlation hole could develop? And we see that for this quantity, now the spin autocorrelation function, now, so what it tells us is how close the spin configuration at a certain time is to the initial spin configuration. So this quantity is equivalent to the density imbalance if this initial state is now state up, down, up, down. So this quantity is similar to the density imbalance in studying in cold atoms. So for this quantity, we do see the hole at long times, as of course, not because you have to resolve the discreteness, but it shows up. So when I saw that, I thought it was a nice thing. Maybe this could be a way to detect chaos spectral correlations experimentally. What are the problems? Well, we need to do averages, as we said. It shows up at long times, at low values, but maybe for small system sizes, it could be possible to do that. But I have some other things to do, but I plan to come up to this point. No? So just concluding, so you guys can ask questions if you want. But a local perturbation is enough to bring these systems, to these systems where we have many interacting particles, to the chaotic domain. Nothing extraordinary about XXE. There are, I showed to you other models, and I'm sure you can find many others. I think what would be the nicest things in this model is analysis of transport behavior, dynamics, time scales. There may be surprises there. And what came up interesting out of these studies were those two quantities, the correlation hole and off diagonal elements. They don't care about unfolding, they don't care about symmetries. So they may be used also to identify the symmetries or to search for new integrable models. And the correlation hole is dynamical, so great for experiments that do not have access to the spectrum. So what I could talk next is exactly what Nick asked, the models with on-site disorder, but I think this is more than enough. I think I already talked for an hour, no? So we can go for questions, if you have questions.
Thanks a lot, Leah, for the great talk. Yeah, so we can, if anyone has a question, go ahead. Jacob, I guess you have a question, right?
Thank you, Leah, for a great talk. I just wanted to know, so you showed that you get chaotic behavior for a single site defect on these models on a line. Do you get chaotic behavior if you put the models on a torus, and does the number of defects you need change when you do that?
I never checked, but my sense is whenever you go to higher dimensions, like 2D or something, you have many more channels. No, so it's much easier to break integrability there.
Oh, sorry. But, I just mean if the line closes up on itself.
So if the line closes, the same story. But when the line closes, then you will have to take into account translational symmetry. Yeah. But you will get chaos as well, but careful, it's that story. You have to separate the eigenvalues according to the symmetry. So, yeah, so careful with the translational symmetry there.
How many do you just, does one defect, is one defect sufficient to get chaos in that setting, or do you
yes,
need more defects?
No, it's the same thing, but remember, what is site number one? You don't have site number one anymore in a ring, no? So one and two and three is all the same. So you have to take into account this symmetry. Once you separate the eigenvalues according to the symmetry, you'll see that it's chaotic.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Tarun has a question.
Thank you. Yeah, very nice talk. I had a few questions. One question is about, just a very broad question about, I would think that just physically one thinks that if a little bit of perturbation should not affect things which are typically observable. For example, things like diffusion or conductivity and so on. Otherwise, a lot of things in experiments won't make sense if zero density of something changes something which is observable at times which are maybe polynomial in system size, that can cause, I don't know, just a lot of trouble for experimentalists. Is there, and you earlier you briefly mentioned that people looked at diffusion for these systems and it looks ballistic. I mean, people looked at transport and it looked ballistic. Is that the way to maybe distinguish this kind of chaos from more generic chaotic systems,
So I think that's the interesting point. That's what I was saying here. What is nice, what could be surprising about these models is their transfer behavior. All those things that I was talking about, level statistics, it's right. What do you expect? Here is where I think things will be more interesting. So I don't know, I didn't check, but in 2008, there were some studies by people in Slovenia where they have the XXE with a single defect and they were saying that it was a diffusive transport. And so I didn't even think more about that. But now in 2018, there was this work by Marcus and John showing that no, it looks like it's ballistic. So you see, people have not explored this much, but I think that's a point where you will find the difference. And then comes my question, because remember what I was saying, is level statistics the best way to define chaos? Or is it diffusive behavior? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right. That's an interesting question. I think
I understand. Okay. Uh-huh. Can I ask one more question? This was very clarifying. Thank you. So you looked at this autocorrelation function, which you mentioned is experimentally more relevant. That's true, but even that one, at least my understanding.
Wait a second. You're talking about the out of time autocorrelation.
Autocorrelation, OTO0.
Okay.
Which is near the end of your. So my understanding was even that is not as easy as compared to the simplest thing that people do experimentally is a commutator. So OT commutator O0, because that shows up in linear response.
So you're talking about this, yeah?
No, it's not squared. It's just...
Okay. But a quantity that would be no squared.
No square. So that for example, trace of e to the power minus beta h, OT commutator O0, that's all of linear response, like conductivity or, I don't know, all kind of things are related to it. And I know many examples where that doesn't work as well as non-commutator, like just what you showed later. I think maybe the later part of your slide, the what you call autocorrelation. So
the spin and this.
Yeah.
The survival probability.
No. Even the later. Can we go a bit further?
I think the experimental quantity, this?
Yeah, exactly. This is OT O0, right? This is sigma z at t times sigma z at zero. So right. Suppose instead of doing that, suppose you do sigma z at time t, commutator sigma z at time zero.
Uh-huh.
And that's more physical. That's what experimentalists measure, because that's what shows up in linear response. And often that cancels out interesting things. For example, at infinite temperature, trace of a commutator is zero, just by definition, of trace. So it misses out, for example, physics of many-body localization and so on, while this one does know about it. So there's something about things which are experimentally more accessible tend to sometimes cancel out interesting features. So my question was, if you look at, have you looked at the commutator and does it show a ramp? That's my question.
This is a good question, what you're asking. And now let me tell you some more details of this story, okay? Mm-hmm. We check many different observables. You usually don't see this ramp. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Even here, we were lucky to get this ramp, and you can see because you have this plus one, minus one. So I think it's a nice combination that end up taking this quantity very close to the survival probability. So you see this ramp, but as you increase the system size, you'll see that it disappears. It goes away. It's exactly what you're saying. It washes out.
I see.
For other observables, it is there, because spectral correlations are there. They are contained in solution. But you don't even see. You really have to zoom in. Then you get it. But again, it decreases as you increase the system size. So getting this ramp in real observers is very hard. Now, we were lucky to get it here for this quantity. But if you go very large sizes, you won't see it again.
I see.
But it's a nice question. Like where can you really see it? Now, if there is a real experimental quantity where you could see that.
Right. I've been thinking about that a little bit. Yeah. Thank you. Very nice.
Yeah, so I actually have a somewhat related or maybe a sort of related question. Are there instances where slow early time decay kind of obfuscates or like covers up the correlation hole?
Okay, so I don't think so. If you are close to middle of the spectrum, it should not, but it may delay. No, like when we add up on-site disorder, that's the whole point. You start breaking the correlations. This hole gets postponed and it gets shallower and shallower with when we approach in the many-body localized phase. And that's what we define as tau this time. And this grows exponentially with the disorder strength.
Because I remember at least for the spectral form factor, I vaguely remember that there were some sort of examples where there's still like a ramp and there's still interesting, like, you know, like a thoughtless time and an onset in this ramp behavior. But at least in the form factor itself, there's some early time decay contribution, in this case from like the disconnected component, because this is a disorder average quantity, but there's some this early time decay and it like it covers up the ramp all the way, right? So I think usually for the form factor people for the correlational people talk about a ramp and then a plateau, but there were some instances where this early time decay doesn't, you know, hit the ramp, it actually just like covers it completely, something. So I was wondering if something like that could also happen for this quantity, the
two quantities, they're practically the same. Now, once you take into account the one-point correlation, is the same. I think you may be right, depending on what kind of initial state I would select.
Well, that's sort of the subtlety here is like the one-point quantity, because at least there it was like the one-point quantities that are covering up all the interesting the interesting ramp physics.
Yeah. So
and then you know, you could say that you have to subtract the ramp or something. Sorry, go ahead.
But this is what I've been trying to emphasize to people. Now, if you are really thinking about experimental quantities, you cannot get rid of this 1-point correlation. The components of the initial state, if you really think about an experiment. So I think there is a lot more to be done there. Analysis of how it depends on the energy of this initial state, you know, the strength of the perturbations.
Well, I think, I like that point of view, because I think even theoretically getting rid of these 1-point quantities doesn't make much sense sometimes, because it only makes sense if it's disorder average, right? If you have a single realization, then it's you can't subtract.
Yeah, but if all that you want to do in your analysis is analysis of correlations, then fine, you get rid of the other. But if you are trying to get to time scales and things like that, then you cannot get rid of it.
Yeah. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
Can you please go to the correlation hole slide where you have explained the capital gamma? So I was just wondering, when we have integrable models, like this capital gamma will be small, I guess, the local density of, because of the local density of states width. How will this plot look like for integrable systems?
For integrable models, this part can be the same because this part only cares about how strong the perturbation is. And I have some works about this for integrable models for this part. Now, so for example, if I have an XXZ, so it's integrable, and I start with any of these site, this computational basis vector, you get this Gaussian behavior. Okay. Exactly the same. What determines this gamma is the initial state that you selected, which kind of spin configuration you selected. So it is Gaussian. When I go to integrable models, what gets hard first is to capture this power law. Okay, I didn't get. Even when I had chaotic systems, but without on-site disorder, I couldn't get the power law. The power law I only got when we did many averages. So once we go to this clean and integrable models, after this Gaussian, the Gaussian is always there if it's strong perturbation, but after this Gaussian, it gets messy, goes down and comes up. I don't get all the features of the model. Yeah, so you, for sure, you're not going to get this clean whole described by this B2 function. Maybe your survival probability gets down and up and so on, but it's not going to be described by this. But so if you have an integrable model, that could be a nice thing to look at if you have some analytical study and then try to put the numerics into that. I don't know.
So I was wondering, like in the formula that we see above, the eigenvalues are uncorrelated for integrable models, right?
For integrable models, like XXZ for some parameters, it can be very small, but there won't be degeneracies. No? If you have a system with too many degeneracies, then you have an extra factor here. But like XXZ, you don't have degeneracies. But you can have spaces that are smaller than what we have in chaotic systems.
Okay, so like the eigenvalues being uncorrelated here, like if there are no degeneracies, that doesn't wash out the first factor?
It does. You also reach an equilibrium, but it's not as clean as I'm showing it here. I cannot tell you, oh, and it goes through the power law and then it gets flat. It gets a bit messier. Okay. When you look at log-log plots, if you look at a linear plot, then you see Gaussian and that with some oscillation. No, it's because here I'm trying to capture all the details.
Yeah, okay. One more question about the picket fence spectral level statistics that you talked about. So for harmonic oscillator, we have that, like extremely correlated eigenvalues. What about if we take an anharmonic oscillator, like add some minus lambda x to the power 4 or lambda x to the power 4 term to it? Does it go over to Poissonian or does it become uncorrelated just like integrable models, or it still is highly correlated like the harmonic oscillator?
If it's not equidistant anymore, if it becomes uncorrelated, then you should get something close to a Poisson. We just have to get rid of those equidistant. But anyway, all of these models are integrable. No? So you're just killing the rigidity of the spectrum when you add some other factors. And let me just tell you one thing, since you mentioned this kind of systems. In this kind of systems where it's picked fence, you do get a hole. If you study the survivability, because it's correlated, but it's going to be a hole that is not described by the B2 from random matrices. It's a different hole.
Okay. Thanks for the answers. Do we have any more questions? Okay, if not, we can thank Leah once again.
Okay, so thank you guys. So if